All right, welcome back to Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr. Still featuring MFSB. The song this time is Love Is the Message. They're bringing some vocals by the 3 Degrees. I thought it would be great to feature this song, again entitled Love Is the Message, as we take a look at diversity in the NBA. Courtesy of Black Enterprise, and let me tell you, I think it's great that we have so many people who are working in so many areas to increase diversity. I know a lot of you know that I have loved ethnic diversity since childhood. And some of you may, I think probably most of you may not even be aware of this because it's been a long time since I shared this, but I actually hated chauvinism before I even recognized racism. I picked up on that chauvinism as a child, as I was listening to some men making some very, very ugly comments about a lady. We were in a parking lot of a shopping center, and they were making some very, very ugly comments about her. I'm just going to go ahead and abbreviate the story to let you know that I really did not appreciate what they were saying. And they pointed out to me when I confronted them about that, asked them about that, why, asked them why they were saying what they were saying, because she's a woman. And I thought that when my mother returned to the car, if those men were still there, I'd tell her what they said, and I'd let her go ahead and deal with them. And when she came back, I told her what happened. Understandably, now, she decided that that was really none of her business, and she wasn't going to say anything to them. And they were still there. And at that same car, in the same shopping center, same parking lot. I say I understand it now, but I didn't understand it then. I was so angry at them for saying the ugly things that they were saying. I wanted my mother to be angry, and I wanted her to do what I thought it would be appropriate for an adult to do, address those men. And she didn't. I became a little angry at her. But I tried to accept the fact that, hey, she had the right to decide not to say anything to them if she so chose. And then I was wishing I'd gone ahead and said something to them. Lo and behold, the next time we went to that same shopping center, ladies and gentlemen, I kid you not, those same men, there were two or three of them, I think three. No fewer than two, but I think three of them were there. The same men by the same car in the same parking lot of the same shopping center. And wouldn't you know it, they were at it again, making some derogatory comments about a lady. I got out of the car, walked over to them, and I said, listen, why? Because my window's down. It was a little warm out there. So the windows to the car were down. My mother left me out there by myself. This was, you know, in Germany and before, you know, people started being stolen like children are stolen nowadays when they're left in the car alone, unlocked, windows down, and all that kind of stuff. I listened just to make sure that I would be confident, I would be certain that they were making derogatory comments about another lady. Sure enough, they were. I got out, walked over to them, and I confronted them after asking them about that again, and they confirmed again that they were making those comments. That's a woman. We don't care about saying ugly things about women. I confronted them. I let them know they were wrong for talking about women like that. Let them know I didn't appreciate it. Gave them a few words. No profanity, anything like that. But I gave them a few words, and I turned around and I got on back in the car. And this time when my mother returned, it didn't matter to me whether she said something to them or not. I had handled it. I was a young child. Young child. This was before I was even a preteen. But I recognized them saying something ugly about a woman, and they confirmed they were saying it about her because she was a woman, not because they knew her personally, had any personal gripes with her. It was because, by their own admission, it was because she was a woman. It would be some time later before I would be exposed to racist comments, and that's why I hated chauvinism before I even recognized racism, because I was exposed to chauvinism before I was exposed to racism, at least as far as I could recall. See, so here's my point. This is a program where we're really encouraged to celebrate diversity, not hate it, not even stop at tolerating it, but move further to celebrate it. Men celebrating women, women celebrating men, each ethnic group celebrating all the other ethnic groups. We are all humans. Why should it be so difficult for us to celebrate each other based on the fact that we are all members of the one human race? That makes no more sense than having four or five branches of the military, all of whom serve the one United States of America. The one country, America, serving, representing that one country, and they're at each other's throats. One human race on one earth, all created by one creator, one God. Does it really make sense that we're constantly at each other's throats? And particularly for the purpose of this discussion, because we have different skin colors, different bodies, body makeups. All right, that said, I want you to help me celebrate the fact that we have some people in the NBA and beyond the NBA who are diversifying the people who make up the NBA. The realm of possibility is often limited for young black boys, particularly black boys who live in forgotten communities. Many are too consumed with the everyday struggle of survival to dream of making history, unless, of course, they possess an extraordinary athletic or musical talent. How about, for example, a man who sold over 100 million albums, was one of the most accomplished composers of our day, and he came from the hood with no formal training in music whatsoever, but had one of the most awesome orchestras there was. Barry White. From the hood, self-taught, sold over 100 million albums. I believe that's the way the story goes. And I particularly like his earlier music. I'm not saying that his more recent music, you know, coming up to the time of his death wasn't good, but I was just more impressed by the earlier music that he did. I know that they were trying to stay up with the times and all that kind of stuff. I understand that. But I like what he did earlier best. But either way, I believe he sold over 100 million albums. He did very well. Either way, he did very, very, very well. He is one of those people who had an extraordinary musical talent. Maurice Ace Dinette beat the odds, and he made NBA history without a stellar jump shot and without a stellar layup. He grew up in poverty in a city called Springfield in Ohio in a single-parent home. His mother dropped out of high school, and he didn't know his biological father until recently, a few years ago. Typically, for African-American boys, sports are a way out, and they usually see that as an opportunity to change their lives. But Stinnett saw an opportunity to connect education to his passion for sports. And some of you have heard me say, hey, look, there's more to sports than just being on the court or on the field. Especially when you've heard me speak with Dr. Nagel, who's had a number of conversations with me about sports. Stinnett's connection with education and sports came largely due to his mother and his grandmother, who exposed him to books about successful people of color. They were intentional about getting autobiographies of prominent black people, and they'd explained to Stinnett that with a quality education and strong work ethic, he too could be successful like the people he was reading about. And that's no joke. How many of us are fully aware of the fact that being able to learn about success stories achieved by people who look like us can often inspire us to also succeed? Personally, I think that it's good when we can be inspired by people of any ethnicity and either gender. I tell you, I was really inspired by Indra Yuhi, who stepped down from the Pepsi-Cola company. The PepsiCo company, I should say, from PepsiCo. I'm inspired by people of any race, either gender, who are achieving well, and from what I can tell, from what little bit I may know about them, they seem to be achieving with integrity. You got a person who makes billions, but they do it dishonestly. They do it unscrupulously. They do it unethically. They don't impress me. Neither they nor their wealth impresses me. It is only when I perceive that a person has gotten whatever level of wealth they've gotten honestly that I'm impressed. And so I mean it when I say the person who may have $5 billion, but has been unfaithful to their spouse and has underpaid their employees and has stiffed contractors, I'm telling you, neither that person nor their wealth impresses me. I'm much more impressed by a person who only has $1 million, but they've gotten that $1 million honestly, with integrity, exercising good ethics. That person impresses me, whereas the person with the billions does not. The person who is getting it honestly, but at the same time, I do understand and appreciate the significance of seeing someone who looks like you to be able to inspire you big time. I understand that, and I appreciate that. Stinnett carried those fundamental lessons that he learned about strong work ethics, being passionate about what he's doing, getting a quality education. He carried all of that into adulthood and went on to graduate. Remember now, grew up in poverty. He graduated with a Bachelor of Arts in Business from Central State University. He earned a Master of Divinity from Princeton Theological Seminary. And believe me when I say, Master of Divinity programs are no joke. They've recently begun to cut back on some Masters of Divinity programs as far as the length of time that it would take to complete them. But let me tell you, it is nothing for a Master of Divinity program to take 5 to 7 years to complete. Yeah, I'm telling you, they're no joke. And I mean 5 to 7 years for people who, some of whom are going full time. Now, some people can take some overloads. You might be able to finish in 3 or 4 years. But I'm not saying that only They're only going to finish in 5 to 7 years, but it is common for a Master of Divinity program to take 5 to 7 years to complete. Stinnett got his Bachelor of Arts in Business from Central State University, Master of Divinity from Princeton Theological Seminary, and then a Master of Education and a Doctor of Education in Organizational Leadership from the great Columbia University. That man got some educational training. In July of 2018, he became the first black man to be appointed as Vice President of Diversity and Inclusion at an NBA team with BSE Global. The company, which is formerly known as Brooklyn Sports and Entertainment Global, they've shortened it to just BSE Global, develops and operates state-of-the-art venues and manages premier sports franchises, including the NBA's Brooklyn Nets, the National Hockey League's New York Islanders, and the Barclays Center. Besides the net, there are just two other positions like this at the NBA team level, both held by African-American women. Gail O'Bannon, you heard me talk about her a few months ago. She's the Vice President of Diversity and Inclusion for the Dallas Mavericks, brought on by the owner of the Dallas Mavericks. And Atlanta Hawks Chief Diversity and Inclusion Officer Nzinga Shaw, who became the NBA's first ever diversity chief in 2014. As the inaugural Vice President for Diversity, Inclusion, and Culture for BSE Global, Stinnett's responsible for creating innovative programming that's tailored for inclusion and cultural competence. He also provides leadership and support across multiple BSE's brands. Since stepping into the role, he's established BSE Global's Diversity, Inclusion, and Cultural Engagement Council at Large. The mission of that department is to cultivate a work environment that fosters upward mobility, opportunities for advancement, and an even playing field for all employees. Sounds like they're serious. Ultimately, it will ensure that they have the best practices regarding diversity and inclusion at the forefront of what they're doing. Through the council, he's establishing a variety of business resource groups for African Americans, Hispanics, women, people with disabilities, and other minority workers. I got to tell you, I love that. The fact that he is taking a look at both genders and at various ethnic groups and not just the African Americans. I love that. We all need to be looking out for each other. And that's what's happening here. The white people overseeing BSE, bringing in this African American who is taking a look at and looking out for all ethnic groups and both genders in their organization. I'm loving it. I'll be back in a few.